One of the most famous American shipwrecks of the 19th century was the sinking of the paddle wheel steamer Central America, which went down in a Category 2 hurricane off the Outer Banks on September 12, 1857. The Central America was carrying a passenger list loaded with miners who had gone out to California for the great gold rush, and who were now returning home with something close to $300 million in gold coins, ingots, and gold dust. They had not counted on the hurricane. And as the ship foundered, the passengers suffered a kind of hysteria, because anyone who tried to swim off with gold in their belts or in their pockets would sink like a stone. The thing they had placed all their life's bets on, gold, would now do nothing but drown them. At that moment, the people of the Central America seemed to go berserk. People went into their staterooms and took out bags of gold and threw them down in the main cabin so that any persons who wanted money could take what they pleased. They had given their hearts away to gold, and it had betrayed them. So they took what small revenge they could on that betrayal by spewing it all around the doomed steamer's decks. In today's gospel reading from Luke chapter 12, we're hearing a continuation of Jesus' teachings about materialism and possessions, which we heard last Sunday, as Jesus slowly made his way from Galilee through Samaria and Bethany to Jerusalem, where he would be praised and betrayed and arrested and killed. This reading pulls us deeper into chapter 12's message about the dangers of putting confidence in material goods. Only now, Jesus gives it a more optimistic twist to his warnings about greed and selfishness. Don't be afraid to let go, he says, because you're going to get something in return from your Father in heaven that is of infinitely greater value than the material possessions of this world. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. But then Jesus returns to a word of warning. A warning to which the helpless victims of the Central America disaster could well attest. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The Bible is a book about the heart. In the Old King James Version, the word heart occurs 725 times in the Old Testament, more often than any other word except for God and Lord, and 105 times in the New Testament. And I could probably spend most of the day reminding you of the ways that it occurs, too. God tells the Israelites to seek him with all your heart in Deuteronomy chapter 4. God tells Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 16 that people look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. The exemplary worshiper, says David in Psalm 24, is the one who has clean hands and a pure heart. And Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Even that sweetest of Welsh hymns, Callan Lawn, says, a pure heart, Lord, is my longing, fairer than the lily's bloom. Only when a heart is holy can it sing by night and noon. But what is the heart? In the Old Testament, the Hebrew word for heart is lev, and it refers to the inner personality, to thinking and reflection, to memory, to study, to conscience, to courage, and even to willing. And the New Testament does likewise when it talks about the heart, or the cardia. It means the whole personality. And it's used as a synonym for the spirit and the soul. Now we have a habit, a bad habit, today, of thinking of the heart as emotions or feelings. Not in the Bible. In the Bible's use of the word, feelings are not enough. When you really have feelings, when you really love something emotionally, you also want to know about it. And when you love deeply and study deeply, then you want to act. These three movements, emotion, intellect, will, are all really one single stream in the Bible. And it's when they're working together, that's when we really can speak of the heart. And the heart really has to be this kind of combined action because of the way Jesus talks here in Luke 12 about the heart and its treasure. Notice that Jesus does not say, for where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. That's what we might expect him to say if we're still thinking of the heart as just another word for feelings. But Jesus belongs to a different school of psychology. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The heart doesn't lead. The heart follows. And what it follows is your treasure. Which brings us to another interesting word, which, surprisingly, we all know, because in Greek, treasure is the translation of thesaurus. Yes, that's right. Like Roger's familiar thesaurus. It's a treasury of words, but it's a treasury. So we need to get our psychology right. We determine first what our treasure is, and then our heart comes after. We recognize something as good and right and true, and then the heart goes to work, to love, to study, and to act on it. And, Jesus says, if we know what someone prizes as their treasure, then we will also know where their heart is. Tell me what your thesaurus is, what your treasure is, and I'll tell you what kind of person you are. That throws a dramatic light on what Jesus was saying earlier in Luke chapter 12. Last week we heard in verse 15, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. This week we hear it even more directly. Sell your possessions and give alms. And the first conclusion that we're likely to come to when we hear those words is, quite frankly, oh no. Oh no, Jesus expects us to give up everything we own, to live like paupers, no more vacations, sell the SUV, go about making life as painful and unhappy for yourself as possible. Actually, if that were the case, we should be wondering why Jesus didn't tell Mary and Martha and Lazarus to put their house in Bethany up for sale. Or why he didn't tell Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea to hotfoot it down to the consignment shop. Jesus is actually after something deeper. Because it is perfectly possible for someone to toss away all those possessions and have it mean nothing at all. There are people who give up everything and apply their intellect to the study of theology and yet never see what they're studying reach their emotions or their will. And at the end of their lives, they discover that what they've been doing is just an intellectual hobby that never really gripped their lives. And it's just as possible for people to become Christians in pursuit of some form of emotional release. And when they get it, they feel happy. But they're not equipped to deal with genuine crisis, because all they were looking for was a mystical experience. And then there are people who take up Christianity because it's supposed to be about living a good life, and they decided they want to do this, but they're doing it, gritting their teeth, and wishing it didn't have to be so hard. In all of these cases, Jesus Christ might be the subject of their attention, but he's not their treasure. And so their hearts, instead of flowing fully and unhindered after Jesus, sigh and groan as though the Christian life was some terrible imposition. They're going to follow Jesus, all right, but they're not going to enjoy it. And that's because their hearts are really following something else. I have an easy solution to the challenge of these words of Jesus, one that will erase all the apprehension, all the agony, all the indecision. Ask yourself, where is my treasure? If your treasure is located in Jesus Christ, then the questions about what to do with possessions, what to do about careers, what to do with priorities, all of those things fall directly into place. Because when you know where your treasure is, all the priorities suddenly come clear. Maybe serving God and Jesus Christ will mean sacrificing possessions or prominence or influence. If your treasure is in Christ, you won't even notice it, because your heart will follow your treasure. Maybe serving God in Christ will lead you to fame and reward. You won't notice that either, because your heart has followed your treasure. This is why Jesus said in Matthew chapter 13, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. And then in his joy, went and sold all he had and bought that field. That man didn't stop and worry about the time and effort it was going to cost him to retrieve that treasure. He did it without a single hesitation, with joy. And not because he was a super saint, but because what he had found in that field really was what he recognized as a treasure. There was a great scene in Jean Anouilh's play, Becket, about Thomas Becket, the martyred Archbishop of Canterbury, where Becket, who has been called from a life of political power and ease to become Archbishop of Canterbury, suddenly discovers that serving God is the treasure he has always wanted. He barely notices whether he is sacrificing anything, much less his titles and honors. And Becket, in prayer, says to God, "I could not believe the road could be a happy one." And yet that is what it turns out to be, even though the end of that road will be martyrdom for him. How different from those unhappy souls on the deck of the Central America who discovered, too late, that they had made gold their treasure. Whom did they have to pray to then? So here is the question. Where is your treasure, the one that your heart follows? Is it in Jesus Christ, in whom, as St. Paul says, are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge? Now is the time And now is the day to answer that question. And not when the hurricanes blow. Now to God, who is able to strengthen you according to the gospel and the proclamation of Jesus Christ, to the only wise God, through Jesus Christ, be the glory forever.